welcome back to the Wicked Biz podcast. I'm your host, Wednesday. Happy Wednesday. I just had to redo this intro like five times because I keep forgetting that I changed the name of my podcast. It is now the Wicked Biz podcast, not the Wicked Lash podcast. RIP to the Wicked Lash podcast. Trying to, you know, expand my horizons and talk about things other than doing lashes, which hasn't happened thus far, but it will eventually. I just got back from LashCon. I say just. It's been like, I got back like over a week ago, but it always takes so long for me to recover. I love going to LashCon. It is like probably, I would say, the biggest lash-specific event in the United States, definitely, possibly the world, dare I say, but it's just super fun. It's just 4 days of like networking, different events, different speakers, different classes. It kind of reminds me, like I always explain to people that have never been, I'm like, it's kind of like a music festival. Like it's 3 to 4 days long and there's so much going on at once that you kind of pick and choose what you want to go for. You choose from like 4 different things at different times, and then at the very end, like everyone goes to the main speakers and then like the big event at night. But it's so much fun. That's where I've made like the majority of my business / industry connections and friends for sure. If you haven't been, I would highly recommend putting that on your list for 2024. It'll be in October again. And Anaheim is literally right across the street from Disneyland in California. A lot of people went to Disneyland too. I didn't because I'm lame. No, I'm just kidding. I just felt bad because I wasn't with my son. I don't want to go experience Disney by myself without my son. I would feel horrible. But anyways, definitely start saving for that for 2024. I would highly, highly recommend. Everything is considered a write-off that you do there, like the products you buy. Oh yeah, I forgot to mention that. There's a huge trade show too. So there's like hundreds of lash booths. I don't know the exact number. It looked like there were hundreds. It was the trade show part was huge this year. But anyways, that's super fun to try out like new lash brands and stuff like that, because most of the time we always have to order stuff online. So I like being able to try things in person and kind of just put a face behind the lash brand and get to know the owners and stuff like that. That's always really fun. But yeah, anything LashCon related or any business event related, such as the hotels, the ticket itself, the airfare or the gas that you use to get there, if you decide to rent a car, if you take any Ubers, any food you eat there, all of that is a write-off. So it is definitely worth it and I highly recommend. Also, shout out to everyone that came. Okay, my cat has joined the chat. Shout out to everyone that came up to me at LashCon telling me that they listened to my podcast. Or there were even some people that came up to me and said that they were at LashCon because of my podcast. Shout out to you guys. And thank you to everyone that just came up to me in general telling me that you've learned something from my Instagram or you've been following me for a while. I really, really appreciate it. That was probably my favorite part this year. This was my 3rd year at LashCon and it was definitely an overwhelming amount in a good way. And like overwhelming can be used in a good way, right? I feel like it is. But there's a lot more people that have came up to me than the last 2 years and it was amazing and I really appreciate you guys. You mean the world to me. Okay, also I have a couple of exciting announcements before I get into this week's interview with Rihanna. So I have been invited to be back as a speaker again at Lash Boss Summit. So Lash Boss Summit it's similar to LashCon, but it's on a more smaller and intimate scale. And it's in Austin, Texas. So if you're in Texas or like driving distance in a different state and you have never wanted to go to LashCon because you're like, that's too far, I can't afford it. If you are more local to the Texas area, like I said, this one's in Austin and the Domain area, I highly recommend you get your butt there. It is a 2-day event that is specific to lash artists And it is not, it's not like LashCon where there's a bunch of different breakout sessions. You're just, you're in the same room with everyone listening to all the same speakers the same day, but there is always such an amazing lineup. Shelby is the creator of Lash Boss Summit. So if you are savvy on your Lash podcast, she is the host of Lash Boss Radio, which was the first Lash podcast ever. It's been around for a few years. So she does this in Austin, and it is very specific to lash artists in general. The lineup is always amazing. There's stuff about how to grow your business as a lash artist and just like lash extension specific topics as well, like as far as the service. I am going to be on the same panel that I was on last year, so we are going to be talking about like how to position yourself to work with a brand rather than just working for yourself. So as most of you know by now, if you have been listening to my podcast or following me, I work for EBL Lashes. I'm the director of education for EBL Lashes. So basically what I talk about on my panel is I'm just answering questions about what you can do as a solo service provider, how to position yourself to work for a larger brand, what that would look like, how to get there, what are the benefits of it, and all that good stuff. So I am super excited for Shelby to have me back. I believe the day this goes up, Wednesday, November 1st, that is when ticket sales are going to go live. So I highly recommend you snag yours. Like I said, it is in Austin, Texas. This is technically the fourth year. So the first 2 years were online due to COVID. Last year was the first time it was in person. And you guys, it was a freaking blast. And if you are someone that has always been too scared to go to LashCon, which honestly, if you can swing it, go to both. Go to Lash Boss Summit and LashCon. I love both of them so, so much. But if you have always been scared to go to LashCon because it's too far or there's so many people, I believe this year there was like 1,400 people. If you don't like large crowds and that sort of thing, this one is on a much smaller scale. It's much more intimate and it's a good time. I highly recommend if you have any questions about it. Oh, did I even say when it is? It's April 26th and 27th in Austin. If you have any more questions about it, feel free to shoot me a DM. I can pretty much answer all your questions or direct you to Shelby. But yeah, I hope to see you there. And then one last announcement. So I have relaunched my ebook, Passion for Lashin'. I originally came out with it at the end of 2020 because that's when my Instagram account really first started popping off. I guess I had a lot of time on my hands because we were shut down for 2 months in 2020. So I got really good at like creating content. I had nothing else to do. I was stuck at home with a baby. Anyways, that's when my Instagram first started popping off. And I realized so many people, like when I would do question boxes or just like in my DMs and comments in general, so many solo lash artists really struggle with growing their clientele. And that's totally normal. It's nothing to feel bad about. I had to go through that for a year as well when I first started my business. However, 2020, even though I opened my own, that's like when I expanded into a full-on salon, which I did March 1st, 2020, having no idea what was about to happen in the world. That was my best year as a lash artist, like financially. So I was like, okay, I think I know what I'm doing when it comes to building a solid clientele. And what I realized is like the people that are asking me and telling me that they're struggling with growing clientele, they didn't have like the basic foundation of running a business in place to begin with. So you can't just like leave beauty school and then be like, okay, I'm having trouble growing a clientele. Like, what do I do? There are so many steps that you need to do to have a solid business before you can even worry about growing a clientele. There are so many things that you need to have in place, and you need to have a certain understanding of the things it takes to grow a clientele. I know this sounds very confusing, but that's why I created an ebook. So it's basically an 80-page guide on, it's like a handbook for your business. Like whenever we start our own businesses, like it doesn't come with a handbook on what to do. Like when I worked for European Wax Center or any job I've ever had, like you get a handbook when you first start and you get all these training videos and you're like, okay, this is what you do. This is how you do your job. Refer back to this if you ever have any issues. And like, we don't get that when we start a business. So that is why I decided to write an ebook to tell you all the things, everything you need to have nailed down in your business before you start worrying about growing a clientele. So then I talk about that stuff, and then I talk about growing a clientele, like getting clients in the door, and then I explain how you retain that clientele, because here's another thing that I see people struggle with. They get people in the door, and then those people don't come back, so there may be some things you're doing wrong there, so we address that as well. I had amazing feedback on it. I had it up on my website for a couple years, and I would get purchases all the time. People love it. I feel like anyone that leaves beauty school or is leaving the place they're working at, they like need this book, because it's going to tell you literally everything you need to know to have your lash business in check. But anyways, I decided to take it down like a few months ago or a year ago. I don't even know how long it's been. I took it down because I was like, okay, I have learned so much more than whenever I first wrote this. So I need to take this down, and like my branding's completely different. I need to redesign it. I feel like I'm a completely different business owner than I was 3 years ago. So I took it down. I rewrote a lot of stuff. A lot of the same like foundational things are still in there, obviously. But I added a lot more new things that I have learned in the past 3 years. So I relaunched that last week. That's why I kind of accidentally ghosted this podcast for the past couple weeks, as I do sometimes. Whatever. I'm a single mom. I'm not perfect. I have all the things going on. But yeah, I skipped 2 Wednesdays ago because of LashCon. I skipped last Wednesday because of my launch. I completely forgot to upload the podcast. So here I am. Hello. I will put the link to that ebook in the bio. Also, I just want to say, if you do not do lashes, this is still a good business guide for you. I remember when I first launched it, one of my clients bought it, and I was like, what the heck? Why did my client just buy this? Like, is she just trying to be nice? And then she DM'd me, and I was like, hey girl, like, I just bought your book because my husband just started his lawn care business, and like, there is still so much that he learned in it. Thank you so much. So I'm like, oh my God, this can literally be used for any type of business. Also, not to toot my own horn, I sent it to one of my like childhood friends. He works for Nationwide now. He's like in the marketing department of Nationwide, and so he literally has nothing to do. He is a straight male, and he has nothing to do with the beauty industry. He's just like in marketing for like this huge company, and I sent it to him, and I was like, hey, like, do you think, you know, this is good? Like, is this like a good, can people get a good understanding of this, like, even if you know nothing about the beauty industry? And he was like, oh my God, yeah, this is great. Like, you should seriously try to get this published. I'm like, oh my God, let me just add that to my to-do list. Okay, anyway, this was the longest intro ever. Thank you guys so much for being back for another week. Even though sometimes I accidentally ghost you, I promise I'm trying to get back on track. I have like 3 episodes that are already recorded, and then you will start to see one of my besties, Jess. She is about to start being my co-host. She is one of my longtime beauty industry friends, and she rents from my salon. So just having a co-host like in person, I feel like the vibe is so much stronger than just only interviewing people over Zoom 24/7. Like, the connection kind of gets lost there. So I'm super excited to have Jess with me in person. Okay, so let's get into the episode. Today I have Rihanna. You may know her as She Trademarks on Instagram. She speaks at every dang conference in the beauty industry. She is so amazing. We all love her. So the reason, I've always wanted to bring her on here. I've always been obsessed with her. But I wanted it to be a really good topic because she goes on podcasts all the time. So I wanted to do something that was a little bit out of the norm. And whenever the app Threads was popping off, did everyone already forget about Threads? Because I kind of did. So when Threads first started popping off, I posted this. I posted something that tends to get overlooked as a solo service provider. Starting a product line is a new business. Becoming an educator is a new business. Putting on events is a new business. Hiring employees is a new business. Creating apparel is a new business. Starting a podcast is a new business. It's not as simple as adding another stream of income. These are all brand new businesses that you will have to start from square one again before it becomes profitable, and that's okay. So I was like, oh my God, that would be such a good idea to bring Rihanna on finally, because she's a lawyer. So we can talk about like the actual legalities and requirements that it takes to start these quote unquote added streams of income. Because any, like, you probably see all over Instagram or, like, any conference you go to, people are like, oh, yeah, like, here's ways to add another stream of revenue, blah, blah, blah. And it's not that simple. Like, there's so much that goes into it. But today with Rihanna, we are going to chat about the legal side of adding different quote-unquote streams of income to your business. So thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this interview and leave me 5 stars. Okay, thanks. Hello, Rihanna. Welcome to the Wicked Biz Podcast. I'm so excited to finally have you on here.
Hey, I know. I'm so excited. It's been a while. We keep seeing each other and we just haven't had a chance to make it happen on the podcast.
I know. I feel like I've been asking you to come on the podcast for a year. And side note, whenever I was like thinking about this last night, like thinking about, oh my God, Rihanna's finally coming on the podcast. I remember the first time I met you, I think it was like this past LashCon, the one that was last year. And like, I don't know why, I never like really get nervous to meet people, but I feel like I was like nervous to talk to you for the first time. Like I didn't know what to say to you.
That is so funny. No, it's so funny because people... You know what's funny though? Somebody mentioned that at like Wicked Business. They were like, I see you all the time on Instagram. And they're like, but then when I saw you talk in person, like it was really intimidating. Like I was really intimidated. And I think that's really funny because I try really hard to be like bubbly and approachable and you know what I mean? Like not your typical like uptight attorney. So I always think it's funny when people are like, no, I was nervous to talk to you. I'm like, what? That is totally not the vibe I think I give off. So
no, I don't think that's the vibe. Like, okay. Cause I mean, I sat down with you like before, like at brunch and like lunch, whatever the dinners and stuff that we had. And yeah, it's just like hanging out with a friend, but yeah, I think it's like really intimidating when it's like, oh, this person's a lawyer. Like she's way smarter than me. Like what am I supposed to say to her?
Oh no, that is funny. That is so funny. You would not believe, I have this one story, which I think is, I want to tell you because I think it's funny. This is going to go to like, oh, she's way smarter than me. I was in one of my law school classes and I tell this story all the time, but I actually don't think I've ever really talked about it publicly. I was in one of my law school classes and this is kind of like me having a Texas type mentality, like the biggest, the greatest, the, you know, whatever. But being from California, our state's pretty dang big and we're like the West Coast, right? And so I was going to law school in Oklahoma. And they were trying to teach us this legal principle and it all kind of centers around like what state you're in when like the accident happens or what state you're in when the issue happens. And so in law school, they always give you hypotheticals. And one of the hypotheticals was like, okay, so imagine you're in Vermont, right? And then he starts going on with the hypothetical. And I leaned over to one of the other girls that was in my law school class. And I was like, well, I'm going to need to know what state Vermont is in before I even begin to like adequately analyze this. You know, and she started laughing. She's like, girl, stop. She's like, Vermont is a state. And I was like, oh, it is? So listen, like, well, lawyers are not always the smartest. I didn't know that Vermont was a state. I'm like, oh, it's one of those little tiny states over there in the East Coast. Like, you know, but.
It's like, oh, it doesn't matter. Yeah. It's not a real state.
It's not a real state.
You have been in our shoes before too, because you used to be a hairdresser. So how the heck did you go from like hairdresser to attorney? What even made you like want to pursue law?
So I have always, like ever since I was little, wanted to be a lawyer. Like I was that weird kid that was watching Law and Order, like at like 7 or 8 when other people were watching like, you know, other things. I remember being in like third grade, fourth grade, like watching Law and Order, an original one, the original one, not like SVU, but like the one that actually has all the court scenes in it. I just was like, wow, that's really cool. And then of course, like I'm a chatty McCathy and all I do is chat and like, you know, I'm very talkative. But then I went to beauty school and I really was liking beauty school and I really liked doing the hair and like the freedom and, you know, the potential like income that you can make and all of that stuff. And so I remember saying like, I think I'm just going to do hair. I just want to do hair. I'm not going to go to college anymore. That's just what I'm going to do. And my brother was like, well, why don't you want to go to college? And I was like, I don't know. Like, it just sounds like a long time. 7 years to be a lawyer is a really long time. I don't want to do it. And he just was like, well, the time is going to pass no matter what you're doing. So you might as well like continue to take classes. And then sure enough, like I worked doing hair through undergrad and law school and the time did go by. And then by the time I was done, with law school, I was pretty much done with wanting to do hair too. So like, you know, after those 7 years, I was like, okay, good, I'm done. So that's kind of like how it transitioned. It was always in the back of my mind, but hair helped me get there, I guess I would say.
Wait, so did you have to go to school for 7 years to be a lawyer?
Yeah, so it's 4 years for undergrad, 3 years for law school. I actually graduated undergrad a year early and law school like a semester, like a halfway, like 2.5 years instead of three. So I did it in a little bit less time than like what it typically takes, but on average, it's like 7 years. Yeah.
Oh my God. So, okay. Whenever you're in law school, is it like, do you have to like decide what type of thing you want to like specialize in? Because your specialty is basically like beauty businesses. So is that something that you knew when you were in school?
No, I had no idea. So when you're in law school, you learn everything. So I learned wills and trusts, and I learned like civil procedure, and I learned criminal, and I learned like legal research and writing, and you like have a very constitutional law. You have a very broad scope of things that you learn. And that's because in order to get licensed in any state, you have to show the requisite knowledge for all of those different subjects. Like I remember when I was studying for the California bar, which is like one of the hardest bars in the nation, that they give you a list of like, I don't know, all these different subcategories of like things that you have to know. And then I think it was like 18 different topics, and they're like very in-depth topics. And then you go to take the bar and you only end up getting 8 essays. So like it's, you really have to learn everything only to like get 8 essays. And so you don't really know like what you're going to be tested on. So you have to know everything. So no, I didn't know I was going to kind of niche down into the beauty industry until after I was out practicing in like the world.
Have you ever, okay, so now I'm thinking of like the Law and Order shows. Have you ever had to like stand in court, like defending another beauty business or anything like that?
So mostly what I do now is like transactional. So I haven't done any like in-court standing for a beauty business. I've done lots of in-court stuff because I was a prosecutor for 5 years. So I have done all kinds of things in court. I've done trials. I've done all of that. But usually for my beauty-based businesses, like the goal is not to be actually in court. The goal is to like settle whatever the issue is before we have to get to court. Because once you get to court, you are pumping in tons of money in order to defend yourself or your case or whatever it is.
So you basically mostly help beauty businesses like with trademarks and consent forms and like that sort of thing.
Yeah, trademarks, consent forms, contracts, like I'll negotiate with other attorneys. I mean, like, people kind of think that trademarks are like, oh, I file, it gets approved, I have my trademark. But there are lots of like hiccups that come along the way that end up you need an attorney for. So like, for example, I had one client who filed her own trademark and then needed my help to kind of get it over the finish line. So I helped her get it over the first hurdle. And then we like beat that thing by the USPTO. Like we convinced the attorney over there that like the name should get registered. So then she moved it to the next part of the process in the trademark application, which is the publication period where they allow other people to kind of come forward and say like, no, this shouldn't get registered. You're allowed to oppose it within a 30-day window. And then sure enough, in that 30-day window, that particular client of mine got opposed. So then I had to work with the other attorney back and forth to like figure out our terms to make it to where they would allow our trademark to register. And so we ended up like coming up with a consent agreement. We changed like the description a little bit, but she was able to keep her brand name. So stuff like that happens to where you're working with other attorneys, or you might get like a cease and desist, and I will work with another attorney to make sure that you don't have to like pay money for using someone else's brand name unknowingly, or like you don't have to turn over profits because you were using a name and like made your own brand and you were making all this money off of it. And then the brand owner that actually owns the registered trademark is like, hey, you made like 20K off of my name. I want it. So I help a lot on like that side of things. But the goal is never to really be in court because that gets really expensive.
Well, I feel like you picked a good niche. Like no one else is like in this space that you're in. Like, I don't think there's anyone else in at least that I see on Instagram that's like a beauty business lawyer. And because of that, I feel like you're everywhere. Like you get to speak at everyone's conferences. You're in everyone's podcasts. Like
I do. It's fun. It is fun for sure.
At my Wicked Business Experience. It was so fun. And I sent out a little form and just like asking people feedback and stuff, because you actually told me you were like, you're going to send out like a survey form, right?
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah, let me put that on my to-do list. And yeah, I got like most of the feedback I got was like, I think it was really important. Like, I think it was really good that you had a lawyer there, because she brought up like a lot of things that I may not have considered being a business owner.
Yeah. I think it's one of those things that doesn't get talked about enough, because I think as beauty professionals and entrepreneurs in general, we are worried about like the cute stuff, the fun stuff, the like, oh, I want to redesign my website. I want branding photos. I want like a new logo. I want all of these different things. Or I'm going to take this new marketing class because I want to learn how to market my business so I can make more money. Or, oh, I'm going to get coached on this one thing because I'm trying to, you know, increase revenue or start teaching or whatever it is. And so you're finding ways to increase revenue or do multiple streams of revenue and all of that. But along the way, you're leaving yourself like so open to liability because you're not putting the proper foundations in place. And so I think that's one thing that we kind of put on the back burner a lot, but it really should be like one of the first things that we get done. So that way, when you're doing all those other things, you're like, yeah, okay, well, if anything blows up, it won't be the end of the world because I have all this protection in place.
Yeah. And that's exactly what I want to talk about today, because as creatives and entrepreneurs, we're like always, well, at least me, I'm always wanting to do like all the things. And I feel like a lot of people are the same way. Like we see not how easy it is to start a business, but we start a business. Usually like we go out on our own, we start taking clients, our books are full and we're making really good money. And we're like, oh my God, I just started a business. Like that was so cool. Like I just did it. I just created like a successful business. I want to create like another stream of income and start another successful business. And then we see like all over Instagram, like coaches and like people posting like, oh, here are like 10 different streams of revenue you can do for your business. And I feel like it's not that simple. And the first time I experienced it not being like as simple as I thought it was going to be, whenever I like added employees, I'm like, okay, yeah, like I'm fully booked and like I'm just going to like add employees, like no big deal. But it's like, in hindsight, I'm like, that was a completely different business. Whenever you're starting a business, first of all, you have to spend money to make money. You don't just automatically like have an idea, add this thing to your business and you start making money. You have to put money forward. And on top of that, it's like different legalities. Like they have to have like W-2s or 1099s or whatever. You have to have a different bank account. You have to do payroll, blah, blah, blah. So do you see like a lot of that happening? Like people, they put like all their eggs in one basket and they're like, I'm going to have all of these businesses, but then it's like, okay, or I'm going to have all of these different streams of revenue to my business. But it's like, no, actually you have like six different businesses going on right now and they all need like their own LLCs and trademarks.
Yes. So I always tell people that like the purpose of an LLC when you start a business is to protect yourself from your business, right? And your business from yourself, so that if something happens to you personally, let's say like, you know, knock on wood, you get really sick, you don't have insurance, you go to the hospital, whatever, and you have all these medical bills and you have to personally file like bankruptcy or something, right? Well, if you have a business and your business is profitable and you have money in business bank accounts and you have no LLC, well, then technically the money from your business can be used to satisfy like bankruptcy, right? Because you are the same person as your business. So the only way that you can kind of prevent things like that is by separating your LLC from yourself. So the same thing, if something happens to your LLC, they can't take your personal money. So what happens though, is when you have multiple streams of income, it's the same thing. If you have a salon that's making a lot of money and now you add a product line, well, the product line can really outmake a salon like 10 times over, right? Because people will, you know, purchase and continue to purchase and continue to purchase. So your product line might very well become like your moneymaker. And then let's say something happens at the salon, because your salon kind of is like your more high risk business, and they sue you for like, I don't know, 100 grand, let's say, and the salon only made like 20 grand, or it only has 20 grand available to like satisfy this judgment. but your product line makes tons of money. So your product line can then give over the additional 80K because it's all one business, because you have it all in one LLC. Versus if you had your product line in its own separate LLC and your salon in its own separate LLC, then they're protected from each other. So if that salon gets sued for 100K and you only have 20K, that's all that they can get because the salon only has that. They can't go knock on the product line's door and be like, hey, we want the 80K. Because that LLC is going to be like, listen, I have nothing to do with the salon. Like, we are our own company. We're our own business. And so really, as you start being a savvy entrepreneur or a savvy business owner, that is when you start realizing that your different revenues of income also need their own protection so that they're protected from each other.
So if a salon owner, for example, so you have a fully booked service provider that owns a salon, and then you want to start adding employees, but you are still taking clients as well. So how would you protect yourself and your salon? Like, let's say if someone like wants to sue like one of your employees, is like the whole salon basically just screwed, or how does that work?
Yeah. So basically the salon is going to be one business. Now if you have salon W-2 employees and you have like 1099s, then that would be a little bit different because you could set it up to where like the salon and salon services and your W-2 employees are one business. And then you basically have like a rental business where you are renting out your chairs or your suites. And that would be a separate business. But if somebody is going to sue one of your salon employees, then the whole that salon or that LLC is going to be sued. If it is like an employment dispute, it's going to go under the LLC, you know, like the salon that has employed them. If there is a client dispute with an employee, it's going to go under the salon that employs them or the salon that provides the services.
That's so scary.
But that's why it's important to have like your business insurance in play, right? Like to have good limits on that, because then that should typically help with, you know, certain situations that are going to arise to kind of give you some protection in that regard.
Okay. So next thing that I see, I feel like a lot of us do as service providers is we all like want to have our own merch. Like we're making shirts like, or like little aftercare bags. I'm trying to think of like what all I've sold. I used to be like heavy on merch, especially in like 2020 when I had like all this fucking downtime because I couldn't work in the salon and I was just at home with a newborn and I had a Cricut machine and I was just like making all these shirts and little bags for my business. So like, is there like a line between like, okay, I'm just making some merch for my brand and then like starting a clothing line? Like what's the difference in like liability between those things? At what point do you need to start like a completely different business for the products you're selling?
I think it really depends on kind of like your risk assessment level, like how risky is the business or your counterpart business. So I think it comes down to, if you're just kind of doing it on the side, a little bit here, a little bit there, you might not necessarily need like a full separate LLC just because you're not like that business itself is not going to make tons of money to where like you want it to have its own protection from any liabilities that the salon has, right? But if at some point you're like, I've got a clothing brand and it is bringing in, you know, 5K, 10K, 15K a month or more, then you want it to have its own separate LLC, because if something happens with either of them, you want the money to be separate so that they're not liable for each other's debts. Like if you now have a full-blown merch line, you've got a clothing line, and you're dealing with suppliers and you're dealing with distributors and you're dealing with whatever, and you breach something on your contract and now they're suing you and they're suing you for a lot of money. Well, you don't want them to be able to tap into the money of your merch line, but also the money of your salon, right? So then like that would be an example of when it is time for you to have the separate businesses so that the debts of your clothing line are the debts of your clothing line and the debts of the salon are the debts of the salon, or, you know, vice versa.
It's so funny because whenever I started like making shirts and stuff, I was like, oh yeah, like this is just going to be some like quick, like side money, like whatever. I buy the shirts for this much and then I'll sell them for this much and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, whenever you're shipping and stuff, there's so much more that goes into it, like the shipping labels and the postage in general, and like putting it up on your website and having a website, and the actual packaging, and then little thank you cards and like all that stuff. I'm like, oh my God, this is literally a whole other business. And then also I see like whenever fully booked service providers like start offering like lash products and like start a lash product line, I'm like, how the fuck do you even have time for that, for one? But for two, I feel like those two things should be separate too. And I don't know if a lot of people realize that, like you have a completely different like liability, especially for like selling like lash products, like adhesive and tweezers and like chemical solutions and that sort of thing. Like selling that to other lash artists, like completely different thing from like lashing your clients.
Absolutely. So it's one of those, for sure, when you're selling products or you have a product line, you want it to be a separate business entity, because for the purpose that you said, like you're selling things that have higher liability, like you're selling things that people are going to use on people's eyes. So if they're going, if they bought your product, your adhesive, and now they're using the adhesive on a client and something terrible happens to that client, well, if they get named in a lawsuit because something happened to that client's eyes based off of their lash set, but they can determine that it was based off of your faulty glue, then you're going to be pulled down into that lawsuit too, right? And so at that point, if you are all one business, your fully booked service provider and your product line is one business, then debts can be satisfied with any of the money. But if you're its own business, the product line is its own business, then again, the debts of that product line can only be used to satisfy like this issue with this lawsuit, not any other money from any of your other businesses or your salon.
Okay. Side note, I'm thinking about the Wicked Business Experience again. So, or like just when the conferences that you go to in general, like what is the thing that people like approach you the most about that they need help with? Like, is this something that people like really think to ask about, or what is like the number one thing that solo service providers like ask you about and need help with?
I would say that solo service providers in general, I think lots of them will try to start doing things correctly from the beginning. So, you know, they might get their consent forms, they might get their intake forms, but then they don't realize just like small things. So I might do a presentation and they're like, I had no idea I was supposed to be using photo releases, like for my before and afters. That makes a lot of sense. Or like, I didn't know that I needed to have like these things in my forms. Or so I think they get a lot. I get a lot of questions on things that I talk about regarding their consent forms and their intake forms and things like that, because it's something that they're already doing. And then they just don't realize that like they're trying to protect themselves, but they're not like fully being protected because of the things that they're using. But I would say the number one thing they get surprised about from a lecture that doesn't have to do with something that they're already doing is how they're handling their finances while having an LLC. Because some of them will have LLCs. They're like, yeah, I did that. But then I'll start talking about like commingling your funds, meaning like not using your business card to buy personal stuff and not using your personal card to buy business stuff. And like basically just using both the business card and your personal card like it's your own. And they're like, wow, I had no idea I wasn't supposed to be doing that. I am doing that. Or yeah, I'll use my personal card at Cosmoprov or to buy, you know, supplies. And then I'll go to dinner with friends and maybe use my business card. So like basically they don't realize what purchases are supposed to be made on the personal account and what purchases are supposed to be made on the business account, and really how detrimental it is if they aren't using it right. Because that is one of the fastest ways to get your LLC protection taken away from you. If they can prove that you are commingling your funds and that basically the LLC doesn't really operate as an LLC, you're not really using it as a corporation, you just have it. And then they will be like, okay, well, since you aren't using it like a formal corporation or a formal business, then we're not going to give you business protection. So all the money's up for grabs. Whatever happens in this lawsuit, like everything's up for grabs.
Oh my God, I didn't even know that. Now I'm like, I feel like I need to pay more attention to that now.
Yeah, for sure.
Because, okay, whenever I like first got my bank account, though, I like just had a DBA and then I got an LLC, and then I still don't even know fully like what the difference is between a DBA and an LLC.
Okay, so a DBA basically just puts the public on notice that you're operating your business as a name other than yourself. So let's say like you're a sole salon or you're a sole service provider and you are working as a solo, but you've created a name for your brand. So you're like Wicked Aesthetics, but you're just a solo provider. So by default, you're a sole proprietor, meaning you don't have your LLC. You didn't apply for an LLC. You don't have anything in place, but you're doing business as something else besides Wednesday Wood. You're doing business as Wicked Aesthetics, right? So then Wicked Aesthetics is what you registered for your doing business as. It's just putting the public, like everyone in Texas or everyone in Houston, on notice that you are operating under a different name than yourself, but it doesn't provide any legal protections. It just puts them on notice. An LLC then is going to be like a formal starting of a limited liability company, and it is going to give you corporate protections that you wouldn't have otherwise. Basically that like liability issue or protecting your personal assets from your business assets, all of those things. So it really does start a company for you, and it's different than just putting the public on notice that you're using a different name.
Yeah, I was like trying to talk to my CPA about this too. And I'm like, this kind of stuff makes my brain explode. I was asking her, well, and then I remember with you, you even told me like when I started the Wicked Business Experience, you were like, you should trademark that.
Yeah, for sure.
So do you feel like that needs to be like, at what point does something need to have a completely new LLC and not a DBA? Like me, for example, I have my salon and then I have like my web design and then I have like my Wicked Business Experience. Like we don't have to talk about my web design. I know that's like a completely different business. I'm working on that. But like my event, for example, like when people start, and a lot of other people are doing this as well, like they're putting on their own little seminars, like does that need to be its own completely separate like LLC, or is this just like an event that is a part of this current business?
It can be an event that's part of this current business. Now, I would say like while your event is small scale, or if your event is small scale, it's not producing a ton of money. It, you know, like may not necessarily need like its own LLC. But like if the event becomes huge, or if somebody is running a huge event, like let's say you are like doing something like, or thousands of people are coming, like LashCon, right? You wouldn't want LashCon to be under the same LLC as your salon, because LashCon is going to have lots of different liabilities that your salon may not have, right? They're hiring speakers. They have these vendors. They have whatever. So if for some reason LashCon is like, I'm pulling the plug on the event this year, and the hotel that they've registered at is like, well, wait a minute, you owe X amount of money. And then all the speakers are like, I have a contract and you owe me this money, or, you know, you owe based off this. And vendors are like, I paid you this money. Basically, there's all these liabilities out there. And they're like, oh, sorry, not going to happen. Well, then if your salon is making a lot of money, or your salon has money in the bank account, then they're like, all right, well, we're just going to go over here to the salon and get the money from it, because you guys are all one business, right? So I think it really depends on like when you start needing that liability protection. So basically how much money is this event making? I would say that if you're like, I'm going to throw Wicked Business Experience 4 times a year and it's going to make me 100K, then yeah, it needs its own, you know, LLC. If you're like, I'm just going to throw one seminar a year and we're probably going to break even, or I'm going to make like $5,000, then it probably doesn't need its own LLC, right? So it all kind of depends on like your risk assessment of how much liability is out there, how much debts are you incurring, or is that like particular business incurring? Do you want that kind of avenue stream to have its own protection, or is the risk not that high, the liability is not that high, to where if it's part of my current LLC, it's not a big deal?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I know that like you, from the other perspective, like the speaker side, because, and I know you've been a speaker at several different things at this point, how do you feel like, do you think people should start putting like speaker contracts in place? Like, what are some things that could go wrong or get like misconstrued? Like if you are a speaker and you are speaking at an event?
So I think one of the big things is who owns your presentation, right? Because this has happened like a couple of times where you go, you speak, they record it, and then they put it on for access to virtual attendees. And then maybe that's for a limited amount of time, but it's like, well, how long are you as the speaker going to allow this event to continue to use your product or your, you know, what you spoke about? Because lots of the speakers speak about something that they either teach about later, they coach about later, or as part of one of their own programs or whatever. So it's like, well, you're giving them limited access to be able to use this, but when does that duration over? So that's like one thing I would definitely recommend that speakers and events producers have in writing, which is, am I going to be allowed to record this and give it to somebody else that wasn't here? Am I going to be allowed to record it and sell it later on like a replay status, right? Because sometimes maybe not even big events, or maybe not even like what you would call, you know, seminars, but you're doing a Zoom with somebody and it's kind of like a Q&A, and there are people that are attending it and they record the Zoom, and then after the Zoom, they are selling it on replay. Well, did you get permission from the speaker to sell it on replay? Is the speaker allowing you to sell it on replay? So intellectual property is a huge thing that I would say both the speakers and event hosts need to be on the lookout for. And then in addition to that, just kind of like some other things, like who's paying for lodging, like hotels, travel to get you there, flights, how is that being done? Are they paying a certain amount? Are they booking it themselves? Do you have specific requirements? Like me, I'm a Delta girl. I want to fly Delta. So I want to be like, listen, I want to fly Delta. If you're going to book it yourself, please book me a Delta flight. So that's like something that could be in a contract. So kind of things like that. Also, another thing is, am I required to provide worksheets? Like, does the event want you to do worksheets or, you know, some type of handout? And if so, when is that due? Due dates, payment dates, all of that stuff really should be in writing.
I agree. That's something that I have like on my list, like for me to do like next year with the Wicked Business Experience. I feel like this year I was literally just like going with the flow. Like I had no fucking clue what I was doing. And everyone that I asked to be a speaker was someone that I was already cool with. But I'm like, next year I'm going to step up my game. I'm going to be professional as fuck. And I'm going to have like everything in writing. Not that like I had anything like go wrong with my speakers. Like everything was super chill. But like, just like you said, like to keep things on a schedule, like that's something that I should have had in writing for sure. I think this was such an important episode, and I'm so glad that I was finally able to get you on my podcast, and I'm so excited to see you at LashCon too. And where else are you going to be for the rest of the year? What do you got going on?
So I am doing LashCon, and then I am doing two PMU conferences, which I'm really excited about. I'm doing PMU Woman of Color. That is going to be in Atlanta next month. And then I am doing PMU Vegas. So that'll be in Vegas literally right after LashCon. I think there's an overlap of like 2 days. So somebody's going to go out there and like set up. I'm going to do LashCon, and then I'm going to go out after. So, but then that's it. That is closing down the end of the season for me. And I will be like in the holiday mode, which I hope other people get into too, you know, like kind of winding down for the year.
Yes. Every time LashCon's over, I'm like, okay, I'm done for the year.
Yeah. Except for LashCon's earlier this year, right? It's in October, November. So.
Okay. And where can my listeners find you? What's your Instagram?
My Instagram is @SheTrademarks, and they can also find me if they want to book like one-on-one consultations to kind of take a look at their business and how they're running it. If they need those extra LLCs for their, you know, income, revenues, all of that stuff on SheTrademarks.com. Templates and intake forms and all of that are also available for DIY, which I really love because you know that what you're getting is legit. So it'll have all the clauses you need, as opposed to like, you know, some of those Etsy forms where you don't really know where they're coming from.
Love that. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Rihanna. I will see you next month at LashCon.
Yes. See you then. Thanks for having me.